Hey, welcome to Jazz United. This is Nate Chenin, the editorial director at WBGO.
And this is Greg Bryant, host of Jazz After Hours on WBGO.
This is a show about music. It's a show about conversation. It's a show about the discourse. And this is a two-part episode, and I think you're going to be really excited about what we've got here.
That's right. Later on, we're going to talk to the host of Afternoon Jazz on WBGO, Kiana Faircloth, to recap a special panel involving the women of WBGO as we continue our celebration of women in jazz during the month of March. But first, we're going to talk about this book by Daphne Brooks, Liner Notes for the Revolution, The Intellectual Life of Black Feminist Sound. And Nate, thank you for introducing Daphne to me. It's been a real pleasure to get to know her through her writings.
Yeah, this book, man, it's got some style. Right.
Yeah.
I should say that this is not expressly a jazz book.
No.
Right. But it's a book that has a lot of jazz in it.
It touches on some critical things. You know, when I think about gatekeeping and journalism in general, women and Black women in particular have been misrepresented and underrepresented. But we have a situation here where, in modern times, in the last 5 years even, there's been this almost explosive nature of new voices coming into the consciousness, a lot of them away from the traditional mediums. People like Issa Rae, writer, producer, director, Lovey Ajayi Jones, author, essayist. They've done a lot to galvanize not just Black women, but readers and critics at large of culture, social issues. And Daphne's book is arriving right on time. Man, she sends this missile straight to the core of the scholarly discourse that the purveyors of this art form, by and large, Black women, are not just the entertainers, but they're gatekeepers and historians themselves. And that was really a light bulb moment for me to hear her express that fact.
Yeah, it's a very powerful framework. And in some ways, it's perfectly intuitive. But in other ways, it really needed to be articulated.
Right? Yes.
Because, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, Ma Rainey, Bessie Smith, Ethel Waters, you know, on through Abby Lincoln and Nina Simone and Billie Holiday, on through Cassandra Wilson and Jasmiya Horn, right? It's one thing to celebrate the genius and the talent of these performers. And it's another thing to frame what they did, you know, in a context of intellectual labor and in a context of connoisseurship and curation, right? There's a sentence early in the book that I think gets at this point. And Greg, you've got the better voice. Why don't you read this passage, which I think says so much about what Daphne is after here.
No problem, man. Above all else, Dr. Brooks says, Liner Notes for the Revolution reads Black women musicians as and performers as intellectuals, as figures who innovated sonic, visual, and kinesthetic styles that documented and served as catalysts for transformations in cultures of modernity and who likewise radically critiqued and questioned the forces of the modern. Wow.
Yeah. That's I hear you read that and I read that passage and I want to let out a woo like I'm at a gig.
Yeah.
You know.
Indeed.
And she not only sets out to do this. I mean, she does it with such aplomb and such beautiful illustrations, you know.
Yeah.
Early on there's a good one from Our World. You know, she's looking to illustrate this point about what female performers can do as sort of critical observers and as kind of curator provocateurs, right? And the example that she cites is this moment that maybe some folks will remember when the great singer-songwriter Renee Marie sang the national anthem in Denver.
It's crazy that she brings that up in this book because I had heard Renee's album on which the mashup, I'm going to call it that, of the Black national anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing, is superimposed over the Star Spangled Banner. That happens on a release called Voice of My Beautiful Country in 2011. But what Dr. Brooks is referencing is from 3 years earlier of a live performance. And you can see it on YouTube. The eyes bulge, the mouths are agape. The crowd does not know what to do with this mashup of,
yeah,
of protest and some other things. But Dr. Brooks says, quote, Renee Marie turns to sound as a historical resource.
Ring with a harmony of liberty.
So there is not just the shallow shock value. She's trying to educate folks who otherwise would not have known even what the Black national anthem was, why that was important. A lot of our conversations around the Star Spangled Banner have only happened, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. And this is, you know, well over 10 years old. But that was an instance that really impacted me in this book as well, Nate. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah. And she also talks about the fact that this is an acapella performance in a formal setting. You know, it's, you know, it is literally her voice, right? So when you say lift every voice, that is precisely what she's doing. You know, this, this critique is embodied. And it really sort of, as you think about it critically, as Dr. Brooks does, you can talk about the white supremacist underpinnings of Francis Scott Key's original, you know, setting of this poem, and what it means to be a Black woman singing just herself, unaccompanied. You know, just the radical courage of that moment, and then like the call to action, if you will, to say like this is not a stunt, you know, this is a reminder, and it's a pointed provocation. And so there are other examples of that throughout this narrative, and we know some of them, they're, you know, throughout history, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you talk about things that Billie Holiday did, we've discussed that recently,
right?
You know, and it goes right up to one of our current favorites, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant,
right,
who appears really sort of toward the end of the book as a sort of culmination of a lot of the energies that are being chronicled here.
Truth. And I'll point out, too, this isn't a book to necessarily bash critics. It's not that at all. Several of the cited journalists and artists include folks that we've come to respect and love over the years. You're one of them, actually. She quotes you on Cecile McLaurin-Salvant when you said Cecile was the finest jazz singer to emerge in the last decade. And you really feel that energy when Daphne explains one memorable night. I don't know if you were there, Nate, in 2017 at Jazz at Lincoln Center when Cecile did her own rendition and repurposed Jelly Roll Morton's murder ballad. Quite an event that was.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I was not there that night, but Daphne was. And I'll tell you a story. Not long after that, I went out to Seattle to, you know, what had become an annual gathering and, you know, ritual, originally known as the EMP Pop Conference, and then it was the Mo Pop Conference. And I had prepared a talk about Cecile. And as I was preparing my podium, Daphne Brooks walks into the room, and we haven't seen each other in a while, and so, you know, we're greeting each other, and she said you're presenting on Cecile. I said, yeah, you know, just about to go here. And she said, oh, well, I am too. And Greg, when I tell you my heart dropped, I was like, no, I can't go up against Daphne Brooks. But it was really beautiful because mm-hmm. she sat in the audience for my talk and she had some really great questions and we had a terrific conversation. And then I think it was the following day that she presented on Cecile. Mm-hmm. And I remember jotting down something she said in her talk, which was that for her, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant's voice is the sound of Black research. And I was like, that is something I want to like put on a coaster and, you know, want to knit it into a blanket, you know, what a cool way to put that, you know?
Exactly.
And it so resonates with me, you know, everything that we think about what Cecile does with the established tradition, with the lineage of the music, you know, her research, she brings her process to the fore. But then also, like what Renee Marie did, she wants to push you past the point of comfort or familiarity. And that's what her murder ballad performance, which Daphne was presenting on, that's what that's all about.
Right. Dr. Brooks is pushing us as well. She's reclaiming as well, reclaiming things to basically unpack them, to bring out some greater truths and tearing down the walls of what it means to be a communicator, as a Black woman, as a Black feminist. It's very necessary to have her voice in the halls of scholarship, because oftentimes, you know, there's still this trend to call new media illegitimate for some reason. You know, they aren't as studied, they aren't as studious, they aren't as articulate as those of us in the halls of scholarship. But Daphne's knocking at the door. She's already in the door and she's telling you, you know, I'm on your terms. I'm going to speak about this topic in a way that's written just for you. So deny me now. Why don't you? That's her dare. And don't get on the wrong side of that, buddy. I'm telling you, you will not win.
Yeah. She is my favorite kind of intellectual force. It's that really wonderful mix of high academic credential and then like completely like ground level.
Digging in the crates.
Accessibility and relatability, you know, and she's, you know, and she's not afraid of the funk, you know?
No.
And so this is a book that includes, you know, the figures we've mentioned, but it also brings in Janelle Monáe and Solange and Aretha Franklin and, you know, just a lot of people who are sort of within the arc of this argument, you know, in different ways illuminate this big central idea she has, which I think is going to be honestly transformative. I mean, I think that that popular music studies will have to reckon with this text. And we are all the better for it.
Indeed, indeed. This is Liner Notes for the Revolution. Daphne Brooks, brand new book that we both are recommending. You should definitely check out. It was a pleasure to read this, Nate. Again, thank you for introducing me to Dr. Brooks.
I'm so glad that we both dove into this together, because this is the kind of book that you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, even as you're reading it, you're like, man, did you see that? Did you see what just happened there?
Yeah.
You know, as we talk about the ideas in this book, I think we also have to hear some music. And of course, given the choice, I will always defer to Cecile McLaurin-Salvant. So let's hear her version of a Bessie Smith tune, You've Got to Give Me Some. Love this track. And when we come back, part two of this episode of Jazz United, featuring our colleague, Kiana Faircloth. Don't miss that.
Loving is the thing I crave. For your love, I'd be your slave. You've got to give me some. Yes, give me some. Can't you hear me pleading? You've got to give me some. Sweet as candy in a candy shop is your sweet, sweet lollipop. You've got to give me to give me some.
Welcome back to Jazz United. And we are very excited to be joined here by one of our colleagues, the esteemed Kiana Faircloth, host of Afternoon Jazz at WBGO and also host of The Pulse. Welcome, Kiana.
Thank you. I'm so excited. I feel special. I made it to Jazz United.
It's a big time.
Right on. Absolutely. It's good to have you.
So, Kiana, earlier this month, you had a special edition of The Pulse live online featuring a panel discussion with the women on air at WBGO. So in addition to yourself, that was Sheila Anderson, Monifa Brown, Rhonda Hamilton, Leslie Harrison, Awilda Rivera, and Nicole Sweeney. Could you tell us about that?
So The Pulse, in celebration of Women's History Month, this was the first time in any setting where all of the women of WBGO had a chance to really sit down and kind of have a girl talk. We got to talk about what it feels like to navigate a career in radio and jazz radio specifically, and sort of what it's been like for all of us over the years to just sort of move through male-dominated spaces, especially on the jazz scene. It felt like some sort of healing was really taking place as the conversation went on in our shared experiences around, you know, the joys of jazz radio and also some of the challenges that come with being women in this field specifically.
Yeah.
And to follow up on that, as this is a small, unique community, how affirmed do you feel? How safe do you feel within it? Do you feel you have the necessary support as a purveyor of this artistic medium?
Well, that is a multi-layered question. Mm-hmm. And I think for many of us in this field in particular, when we talk about the challenges, it's almost as if you should not expect to be affirmed by people in this field where you might normally see that affirmation overflowing when it comes to male counterparts, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It's almost as if you're a woman in this field, you should just be happy to be here in a way. But for men, it's almost as if they are affirmed and those praises, those affirmations that you speak of are overflowing. And oftentimes, those praises are flowing for mediocrity, if that makes sense. Mm,
yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah. Unwarranted. And is that different? Or I guess I should say, how is that different for your experience than it is for the experience of a woman on the bandstand, you know, which is also a male-dominated space? It is in one way more visible, but in another way, less visible. You know, it's like, is it the same set of issues, or do you feel there's a crucial distinction there?
You know, I think it's a shared experience. And as Sheila Anderson mentioned on the panel, she mentioned how, you know, she's been in conversations with male musicians, being the queen of hang and always on the scene and in the clubs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when she asks a male, you know, how do you feel about, say, Brandi Younger? Oh, well, she's good. She's exceptional. You know, she's the exception to the rule. She belongs here because she's so good, you know? So it's the same challenge of being twice as good if you're a musician and a woman, or if you're on the airwaves presenting this music as a woman. It really is a shared experience, but I think amplified a little bit more if you're a musician on the scene. For sure, you have to be 10 times better than your male counterparts in order to be taken seriously, to feel like you can swing with the best of them. People want to feel like, you know, you have to prove yourself and that you belong. I'm thinking of a specific instance, Camille Thurman, for example, the first woman in 30 years to be a regular member of the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, the first woman. I'm sure there are so many others that had tried to have a position in any orchestra, not to call out, you know, JALC, but it's just, it's notable to think that it took that many years for a woman to have a permanent spot in a jazz orchestra.
Mm-hmm. I have to follow up on that, Kiana, because there's another facet of it that you all touched on a bit. There's an experience that I think every woman who has a relationship with jazz as a listener has had, this moment where some dude will come up and challenge your authority, like your knowledge, like, oh, you like Cannonball Adderley? Well, did you know that, you know, blah, 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 right? This kind of like, oh, prove it, like prove that you belong in this club, right? You know, I think Greg and I will say that we had to do some of that too, as young listeners, you know, like the old heads being like, you don't know anything, like, but it's coded and it's experienced so differently by women. And what are your thoughts about that?
You know, being a presenter of this music, you're constantly challenged, almost like the audacity for you to know this music or to call yourself, you know, an expert, if you will, on jazz. How dare you? So it's almost as if the pressure or the challenge on knowledge is sort of a regular thing. It's something that at this point, many of us have just taken stride, you know, it's to be expected in a way. But because of that, it has made us better and sort of gotten us to this point. So it's like, thank you for challenging us in that way, because it is a breeding ground, as you mentioned. For us, it has really sort of sharpened our swords in a way in this field. So you just kind of roll with it.
Occupational hazard.
yeah, indeed.
An occupational hazard, for sure.
So in the face of these struggles and this unfair stacked system, you know, what is the best recourse? And what are some of the decisions that you and your peer group have made to, you know, to sort of transcend, you know, just to like not be bogged down, but also to not get bitter?
You know, it's funny because after the panel discussion, we sort of had a post discussion, you know, chat, if you will.
That's where the real stuff happens, right? Yeah. It's the hang. You know,
some real girl talk. And, you know, we talked about how the thing that we have to keep at the forefront of our minds is why we do this. And all of us are driven by a greater purpose for doing what we do. And I think that's the thing that we have to constantly remind ourselves, that is bigger than us. The reason we do this is because we want to see this music transform. We want to see it transform lives. We want to see it cross over demographics and genres and continue to move forward and to be those people that can provide a particular platform for artists, you know, of yesterday and yet to come.
Well said, Kiana. And we want to thank you for not only hosting the panel, but joining us here on Jazz United today. It's been awesome just getting your perspective and your energy. And man, just thanks for everything that you do for our station and keeping us in excellence.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Greg, Nate, I really appreciate your support and really seeing to it that, you know, our stories are heard. We're in this together, for sure. It takes all of us. It takes a village, if you will, to be able to make this thing work. And I appreciate you guys for your support, truly.
Indeed. And like you said, we're in this together. And that's the theme of our efforts here in March, to remain right here where we are, doing exactly what we do for WBGO. This is Fun Drive time, and you've heard us talk about it here on Jazz United. WBGO provides just a platform for us to speak about these topics and issues in our music, Nate and I and Kiana today. But we want to ask you to tangibly support us so that we can ensure that we're here doing these Jazz United podcasts and all of the outflows of WBGO, Jazz Night in America, the checkout, our 24/7 broadcasting terrestrially and online. So right now, I'd like for you to just to take a minute to go to wbgo.org/support and think about becoming a sustaining member of WBGO. You can do it for as little as $8 a month. Many of you, if you have that, that's great. If you have more, that's great. No amount is too big or too small. We just ask that you support us. Again, wbgo.org/support. We are in this together.
Jazz United is a production of WBGO, hosted by Greg Bryant and Nate Chenin. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and on WBGO.org.